session number 22659, Reel 13.
This is the seventh reel of a taped interview with George Wright in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 11th and the 12th, 2001, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. I'm interested, George, to ask you what your personal view is of what the Second World War achieved. At the time, how did you feel about it?
Well, when hostilities was ceased, we were very pleased and thought, well, now it's a chance for us to relax. And we were hoping that we'd get home to see our people more often. But unfortunately, being a member of the original regular army...
It took you a while to get home. You spoke about that earlier.
I was detailed for duty.
All right. Well, what at the time, how did you feel about the Second World War and your involvement in it, and what had it achieved?
Well, I'd certainly gained a lot of experience of matters affecting other people and other countries, and we saw their problems, as in some cases it was natives that we were dealing with, and it was quite an eye-opener.
Being on the victorious side, what had you won, do you think?
We'd certainly gained some satisfaction, a lot of satisfaction, that if we applied ourselves, we could do some good. But well, the attitude of some of them was a bit doubtful.
What was the attitude of those people that were doubtful? Why were they doubtful?
Well, mainly the Japanese type and their attitude towards the local people that they had invaded previously. Well, when the hostilities ceased, we did get the satisfaction that we gained something, and it was interesting that the majority of the men were always keen to get further education, and within units or in ourselves, wherever possible, the qualified people were taken in or required to assist all the other members in some sort of education that was available to them on the spot, and we didn't have to go far to get some of this, because there were quite a number of members of the unit who were educated people, such as school teachers and tradespeople and people of that nature that were of use to the unit members and their and what they hoped was their future. They haven't, some of them haven't been away from them for 4 years.
So they were keen to re-educate themselves.
Yeah.
In relation to what you'd achieved in defeating the Japanese and the Germans, what did you hope for the future of the world?
Well, we did hope that with our success, that it'd give us some priority or seniority to guide the attitude of these people that have been classed as defeated. Although, in a lot of cases, under their skin, it seemed not to take any effect.
Well, we can talk about that because you were involved in going to Japan, weren't you?
Yeah.
In looking back, what would your view on the Second World War and what it achieved be now?
Well, it was really, it's really surprising because how as far as the Japs go, our indication were that they were a rough people industrially, and that I know, I can remember when I was young, that some of the stuff that the Japs turned out was, you might say useless. But as time has advanced, it's the opposite. They've proved themselves that they can do a hell of a lot of things of a top-class nature. Mainly, one of the best indications is motor cars. You see, riding around the road, everyone's got them. Except me.
Would you want one if you could have one?
I did have one. But, of course, I'm a bit old for it now. I had a disability which put me off it, so I decided to finish driving.
So how do you see your involvement in the Second World War now?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I've advanced in my years, but it certainly was a great field of education, particularly on the practical side. And even up to present day, it's very surprising how things have, even since then, when we advanced so far, how much it's advanced now in recent years. Most people don't think back over the years and can see the difference.
When the Second World War had finished, and you mentioned that you'd come back to work in your father's business, was there ever a time when you thought that you'd give up being a soldier? After the end of the Second World War, when you come back and you were working for your father?
No, I didn't say that.
When you were on leave for that 11 months, did you ever think of not going back to the army?
No, because I had a feeling towards it that I'd always had, even as a young fellow, right from when I was a compulsory training cadet at the age of 17. And
How did that feeling be enhanced by your experience?
It sort of was in the blood. My grandfather, having been a regular with the British Army, but my father was not. He was. He didn't take it on. But I don't think he was physically fit enough.
So when was it that you heard that you were going to be sent to Japan?
I was going to Japan. About June 47, I was. I was at that time working at Western Command headquarters. And I was warned that, tomorrow you've got to go to Japan.
Not much time.
And the.
Not much time to prepare.
I went at the. I went crook at the moment because. With the person who told me, he was an old friend. And he said, I'll go on. And he went to see the base commander, who I knew. And the commander said, oh, they can't do that. He said, you ring them. You ring Melbourne. And tell him he can't go at 24 hours notice. And wants 14 days leave. So I was he told my friend, oh, you ring Melbourne. He was the DAQ. And he said, no, I'll ring them myself. So he was the base commander here, and he rang Melbourne and told them I couldn't go. I had to have 14 days leave, which I did get without any further bother. But when that was over, I was flown up there immediately.
What were your feelings on going to Japan?
Well, it was part of the job.
How did your wife feel about you going away again?
Well, she'd known me for a number of years, and I was in the army then, and relatives of hers had a bit of a background in it too, so she accepted it. And
as I understand, she was to go up there too.
Not at that stage.
Did she know that she was going to go eventually?
No. And I said, well, we'd heard that they were going up there, but time was getting on. And when I did get up there, and I said, now what about my family? Oh, they said, the last lot has been nominated and they're going to leave very shortly. I said, what? And I quoted my service compared with some of the families who were nominated, and I was very annoyed. And about 2 days later, this is in Japan, I was informed that, oh, we've had to cancel one and we've put you in. So the family's coming. Of course, I don't think that they're, well, I think they just cut the other person off the list and put me on, you see.
Where were you based in Japan?
I was based at Curie, which was an old naval base, big workshop, was very much knocked about by the war effort on it, bombed and that. And it wasn't a bad spot, but I had some barracks sort of things there, but of course we had quite a good little place for the married, for the families, which was about 3 miles away, and alongside the sea. I can't recall the exact name of the place now. It was quite a good spot, and they'd built houses there for us. Of course, they were I thought amusing at first, because they were European design, you might say, but included a lot of Japanese material, such as bamboo, bits of things like that. But they were quite good and comfortable.
As I understand, that was the purpose of having you and your family there, to sort of give the Japanese a bit of a taste of Western culture.
We had we were allocated family servants, but my wife wasn't too happy with them.
Why and, not?
We only had one. One, I think it was. Oh, well, the thing was, they weren't the top class, and, well, they couldn't speak English, some of them, or most of them. It was a problem.
How did they treat you? What was their attitude towards you?
Oh, quite good. Their attitude to us, I must admit, was quite good. It was some experience. There were quite a number of, what the dickens they call them, European crosses. Most of them, I think, had been in America, and they'd been tossed out.
So they were being repatriated back into Japanese.
Yeah.
Do you think that they embraced the presence of MacArthur and the Americans and their way of democratizing the place?
Oh, yes, without a doubt. They accepted them, and I think they tried to follow his example, but it was such a big thing, you know. There was quite a population up there and around the place, and I think where we were, we weren't the highest, was the highest grade area, you see, more or less a factory area. And
how severely had the place that you were in been bombed? Can you describe it to us a little bit?
Oh, yeah. The area generally, I don't think it had a great deal of bombing. It was the workshops, which are detached a bit, they did cop some.
Did you ever see Hiroshima, which wasn't actually too far away from where you were?
Yes.
Can you describe to us what that looked like?
Well, I think I only went over there the once, had a trip round in a vehicle just to see what was, what had gone on, and the industrial area was quite well knocked about, but or in illustrations you see now, the big domed looking place, well, that was going to be kept as a monument or a place of interest and a lesson to the local people. Well, apparently it's still there. But, no, it's...
How would you describe the devastation that you saw there?
Not enough. My feelings towards them weren't, what would you say, sociable. Because of a country like that, it wasn't very big, but certainly it had a big population, but they got the idea they could run the world. And I didn't quite agree with that. And well, I will admit that when I came back, a couple of them wrote to me, the fellows that had worked around the area. God knows why.
I wanted to ask you, given the fact that you'd seen destruction by normal bombs,
yeah,
how did what you saw at Hiroshima compare?
Well, it was certainly more devastated than an average area. You see, because what we saw, these places being bombed, they're mainly open country stuff, you know. And it was foliage that copped most of it, but looked totally different when you came back and saw an industrial or civilized area knocked about, because you could really see the damage. Whereas a lot of this other stuff, the ground was soft and it went down into it.
But this whole area had been done by one bomb.
Yeah. But that was a...
What was the image that you got from that experience, do you think, that one bomb had done all this?
Well, it was certainly that it was, if it was well aimed and in the right spot, it was a really real devastation. Well, it all depended on what was hit. You know, some steel things that got hit, they got twisted and that, but it looked funny. But you saw a concrete or a stone place, and of course that fell over.
Yeah. Were you taken or shown any of the specific effects of the atomic bomb?
No, I only saw what I saw when going around. I think what I did was I took one of my interpreters with me, who could tell me a bit. Eh? It was only more or less a sort of a Saturday afternoon run around. Eh? And there was certainly different steel frames against other stuff. They'd get twisted in that, they might even have stood up. But, of course, the harder stuff, the stonework and stuff like that, well, that went over.
How did it make you feel to know that your side had a bomb like that?
That we were lucky to get a so much devastation with one strike. But still, it took a hell of a lot to complete a strike or construct the things for it.
So what would have been your main duties in Japan?
My main duties? Well, my main duties there was as the name of the unit that I raised or controlled and trained, one OST, it was classed as one OST security company. And what we were doing was ensuring that the cargoes of rations and stores and things like that brought from up from Australia and other places, when it was unloaded in our area, it was secure in the store. And previously, the unit that I'd replaced considerable quantities of the stores disappeared, and no record of them.
So what was happening to that unit?
Well, it was disbanded. I took it over. I took over the unit and interviewed the people, the men, and then I said, well, I'll take all these people and with me, or watching me and listening and recording what I was doing was someone from the records office, and they had all the records of the troops there, and they said, well, we agree with you. And there was a hell of a lot that I didn't take, and they went out to field units, and then I had to build up the unit from reinforcements that came up. And I had the privilege of seeing each one before they were posted to me, and seeing each one and interviewing them. And the records fellow was there, although he made no remarks when I was interviewing, but he agreed with me after each session was over, or whenever I got reinforcements. Just between you and I, an example. Before I took over, they were losing up to 2,500 pounds worth of goods per cargo. And after I took over, it was down to £5. Now that was a remark that was passed to me by an officer from the VCOF headquarters, that they couldn't understand it. He was a Tommy Major, and he got me aside one day and told me. I never saw it recorded officially, but he told me, so you can't understand it.
So in all, did you enjoy your time in Japan with your family?
Oh yes, we had quite a reasonable time up there. We course, there are other West Australians up there that I knew or went up there, and also other people, of course. And, they had sort of a kindergarten effect for the kids and things like that. And they had, admittedly, they were Japanese staff, but were Jap-Europeans. And they were quite good with the kids, you know.